Hi, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to the AfterBuzz TV After Show for the People vs. O.J. Simpson American Crime Story, Season 1, Episode 9, titled Manna from Heaven. Join us as we break down the episode with special guest Dale Godboldos.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Such an amazing episode to break down. My name's Pegarad. You can follow me on Twitter at Pegarad. I'm joined by the lovely Stephanie Georgie.
And you can all find me on Twitter at Stephanie Georgie.
Shaka Smith, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shaka Strong.
And Chris Howard, you can find me at Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram, also at LegendaryLivingDaily.com and LegendaryLivingTV.com.
And thank you, Dale Godboldo, for joining
What's
us today.
What's up? Hey. Thanks for having me.
Plays on the Dream Team.
Yes.
So awesome. So much to talk about this episode.
Yeah. And Angel was not lying last week. She let us know that this episode was going to be ridiculous. In fact, I feel like
she did say it.
Yeah, no, she said it, but I'm saying it was more than what I expected.
I had goosebumps throughout the whole time.
Yeah, we just watched it, and I'm ready to go rally in the street right now.
No,
I'm just
like, come on. Right. It's ridiculous how it brings it out.
Dale, as Carl Douglas, it's pretty awesome to have you here. So we got both Carl Douglas and Sean from the defense team.
My partner in crime, Sean. Sean Chapman, a.k.a. Angel Parker.
She hooked us up.
She brought it tonight.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to talk about. We'll kind of go through it chronologically, and then we'll just talk, because we have so much to kind of debate, I feel like.
Yeah, let's get it in. Sit up. Let me get comfortable.
Get ready.
Let's get it on.
So the show starts out with Laura Hart McKinney. She's the girl who had interviewed Furman for a screenplay that she was researching. And we see the investigator call her and be like, give us the tapes. And she's like, I want nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. But that kind of sets the whole episode up with the whole Furman thing. So let's get into Darden questioning the witness. Who is the witness, by the way? Do you guys know what the witness, the guy in the beginning?
I don't remember his name.
He sounded French. He sounded like he had a French accent.
Yeah.
So he overheard, it sounds like, that night a conversation.
Two men arguing, he said, and he saw the Bronco pull in. He saw the Bronco pull in, I believe, and then they heard the two men arguing. Yeah.
And the voices
sounded black.
Black.
And of course, Johnny Cochran said, oh, that's... Yes, no way. You can't sound. There's no. What does that mean?
How do you sound black?
How do you sound black?
Exactly. And I think that's a problem that we have, is that there are these sentiments or ideas or stereotypes, and people use them and they try to present them as fact. Mm-hmm. And so it was very important when he had that Cochran had that objection. As a witness, you have to actually testify to what you know. You cannot speculate. Mm-hmm. You're not there to just idly figure out what happened.
Well, I think he did.
So you're not allowed to speculate. And so, that was a great objection by Cochran.
What was interesting, though, was that Darden really believed that you could tell the difference in the voice. And you heard him say that to Marcia, which was just...
And as an attorney, that made no sense, because I knew you could not follow that line of questioning with that witness. Right. So I think at this
just
point...
Just passions.
At this point, it was important to remember, they've been there for a year. So people are worn down, and their real raw emotions are coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to mention real quick that I am live on the chat roll, so if you guys have any questions for our special guests and or the panel, please let us know.
So Marcia is pissed. She's like, we had this guy, and all of a sudden it turns into a racial thing, and they're not going to care anymore. That's all the jury sees now, is this race thing. Comments.
It started that way by Shapiro, and it's funny how, like we were saying earlier, he was like, this is going to be great. Everyone was slightly hesitant, and then it became more than a racial issue. I mean, that's what people wanted it, and all that replays in my head, and he's so lucky that he made the opening statement, an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. Yeah. So if you can continuously kind of tie the things in together, and then when he really gets aggressive... as far as not, wanting the tapes to be shown, and, speaks to the NCAA, and they address
it. And NAACP.
NAACP.
Is
that a basketball? I know what you meant. Same thing.
It's not. No, forgive me. I'm sorry. My apologies. No.
No, you're on a roll, girl.
You got it.
He did start it all, and then it got, with Shapiro started it all, and then it got out of control, I think.
Yeah, Shapiro just planned to set it up so that he could settle. He didn't actually think it was going to go to that level. But my problem with this whole thing is Marcia Clark's approach to this whole thing and her problem with everything is that it's getting too racial. And the fundamental issue with really the African-American community and what the defense was trying to say is you cannot take race out of this. Yeah. That is pivotal to the issue here.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I think that's why, you know, the prosecution just couldn't get their heads wrapped around it. They just kept trying to remove race instead of dealing with race.
Yeah.
Head on.
Absolutely. You
know? I think that's so important because we have this term called white privilege, and I think a lot of people think that means you're a racist. Mm-hmm. And I think, at least from my understanding, Marcia Clark is the least racist person that I could possibly see.
Colorblind privilege
allows you not to see things even when, you know, they're applicable.
Right.
So.
Right. Exactly.
And like you said, that falls into white privilege also because you were never exposed to it.
Yeah, and it's not a racist thing. It's just you don't see things from the same angle. And so you miss it.
Angle, perspective, and you can't. Yeah. And that's Cochrane said that in this episode. Once he said, no, you don't understand. Yeah. You can't understand. Mm-hmm. That goes back to the article that you asked us to read in the beginning of the show.
Again, I'm going to give that article a shout out. Why don't discuss racism with white people? Search it.
I love talking about racism. I love it.
Some
of my best friends are white.
Until you've walked in the other person's shoes, you cannot comprehend what it's really like.
Right. Yeah.
What was interesting and fascinating for me was to watch Darden's transformation just from the beginning up to this episode. Because in the beginning, I used the word lazy in the beginning that he was being portrayed in that way. Because I could never know what the real man was like because this is a portrayal. I thought it was he came off that way, but really it was almost like entitled or lazy. And then I've seen him just, I think this case, if this is an accurate portrayal, allowed him to express himself more fully as a man, to take charge of his own destiny. Mm-hmm. I think it was beautiful to see the strength that he had throughout the course of this and what he displayed in this episode. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think it was that transition of black face to black voice.
Exactly.
Yes. So he didn't get it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they have these mannas from heaven, but they're located in the... That was such a good intro to the episode, though. They're located in North Carolina. Does anybody know why? I didn't catch why they were...
Must have been the author.
That's where she had moved to. So she has the transcripts mm-hmm.
North Carolina has actually a huge, like, studio. Like, you know, they film a lot down there, too. They have, like a big Warner Brothers out there.
Yeah, they do a lot of filming.
A lot of films are based on there. Exactly. I was going to say Dawson's Creek. Tree Hill.
So Bailey and Cochran are discussing who should go down there. Bailey saying,
"Thank God, Bailey.
I've won so many cases. Let me go." And Cochran's like, "No, I'm going."
It's kind of funny to see them arguing between themselves to watch their debating skills. Bailey's strong.
And Bailey delivers in that scene kind of all those things that you would expect a person to go to North Carolina and say and to do.
Absolutely.
And it's so important when you're a lawyer to know your locality. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I mentioned this in an earlier episode. If you're going down to the Florida Keys, you're not going to walk in a full business suit. You're going to walk in something more laid back. You might go in shorts and...
linens or whatever.
Yeah, and so it just depends on where you are. And Effley understood this to the nth degree and we saw him really play up on it.
Was that a fun scene to film?
Which one?
When they're all in the defense team debating on who
should... Oh, my God. And what's great, because, you know, a lot of times I'm just in the room, you know, just reacting, and I'm watching this masterclass go on.
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, that's some of the most extraordinary acting going on. And every actor's process to get to that brilliant performance is entirely different. Travolta is entirely different than Courtney. And it's different than Angel. Everyone's process is totally different. So sometimes, and I feel so bad, and I laugh about it even now. There's a scene later on when Sterling blows up in court, and we're sort of chuckling, and he blows up. I messed up a take so bad because I didn't hit my mark. I was just watching Sterling. And they were like, Dale? I was like, oh, man, I'm sorry. And I had to apologize to him because I was really that... you know, enthralled by his performance. So that would happen to me all the time in the room.
All the time. In terms of their process and how they prepared, were there those on the crew that were real method actors and that were in character all the time? And
nobody was like that.
No,
there was none of that. It was people would go over to the side and do what they need to do quietly. But if you're in the space, everyone was very silly. Nathan Lane is a nut. Yeah. A nut. Cuba is a nut. You know, Courtney Vance is funny and hilarious.
To be they're professionals. Him, though, too.
Yeah. So they know how to cut in and cut out. Swimmer, he's just cool.
Okay. I thought maybe he had to be real.
That's such a good description. He's just really real cool. Like, yeah. But I understand what you mean by that. Like, he wasn't doing too much, chilling. Like, just
funny as hell. Yeah. So funny.
Because not only are they all great actors, they're like seasoned. Like, they, you know, they've had this great career
for decades.
Yeah. Yeah. And somebody on the panel actually had a dream about Schwimmer.
Really?
I didn't say whose it did.
Well, I think that gas gives it away. I was like, oh crap, I think it was her. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
But to Shaka's point, but to Shaka's point, when he went in there and he played to his audience, he knew who his audience was, F. Lee Bailey, yeah. Mm-hmm. And to tailor his communication to get through to them, mm-hmm. that really showed the depth of his wisdom and his years in law. Mm-hmm. And so you got to see where you look at Johnny Cochran's passion coming out for what he was doing, and you look at Shapiro's very kind of common sense and regal way of doing things, and old school church, but white Southern Dixieland church. Bailey knew how to play.
What they think is important, what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. And I actually do like that the judge mentioned that you're not in Los Angeles right now.
Yeah.
Like, this is a show.
There's no cameras.
Yeah. And repetitively. Hollywood.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because
like,
other producers resent that. Yeah. Yes. But you heard the Southern drawl come out with F. Lee. Yeah. You know,
I don't even think he's from the South.
Yeah. He became a chameleon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they bring the tapes back to Ito. They're smoking guns for the nation. You know, he's trying to push this. And they finally listen to it. And gosh, it was so hard to listen to. I don't know how you guys felt, but I was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, my recollection was that he said the N-word one, maybe two times, just from that time period. I didn't realize it was so inflammatory, the planting of evidence, mm-hmm. and it's 30 mm-hmm. times, and I had no
it
idea.
Almost it almost seemed fake to me. I'm like, man, but nobody uses it that consistently.
Yeah. Right. Black people don't even use make it sense. That consistently.
Well, black people don't say that.
That's just, that was weird. I'm like, why do you feel nowhere near that? It was like weird because it was as if he was getting enjoyment from saying the word,
and
because
the
it was being said in moments that were unnecessary.
I remember at the time, that's what they said. They kind of played on that he was kind of trumping it up and making it bigger. Trumping it up and making it bigger for the screenplay because he was hoping to be, you know, have this included. But he was disgusting. It was a disgusting display of racism. To have him go on and on about how they planted evidence.
And the hostage story is what got me.
Unbelievable.
I kept thinking maybe they could sensationalize this for the woman's screenplay. Sure. But when he says, don't use it because of statute of limitations.
Exactly. Because he said 7 years.
7 years, yeah.
Exactly. After he said, he's like, and I threw that bitch down the stairs.
And there's a 300-page report on it. Yeah. And it's like, my God.
And it's really scary, too, because just to bring up the LAPD in general, and I know, and this is that Cochran was fighting it, saying that this was 1995. It's 2016. Yeah. Right. Tell me why there are some people out there who still feel some type of way about their own experiences.
Oh, well, it makes me so mad. I know, but it's just ridiculous.
Right. And Furman says it. He's like, you know, if we did it the way the Academy taught us, then we'd be idiots. What pisses me off now is that, like, well, how has the Academy not found out a new way, a new protocol, a new curriculum for our police academy to figure out situations like this? Because clearly people are not the same way that they were before.
If it can't be done on the up and up, then it shouldn't be done, right? It's like they should have a... And what's disgusts me is we were in there, we said, I think he became a commentator, Furman, afterwards on like Fox News or something like that. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know that to be a fact that it's Fox. That was a guess, but there's...
It's Fox. On record, it is Fox. But it's just disgusting.
How could people give somebody like that credibility after he's on the record coming out this way?
Well, it's Fox.
Yeah. Well, he has his side of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really don't know what it is.
I don't know how you define that.
But it doesn't matter. Yeah. When you talk like that, it really doesn't matter. We don't need to hear it.
So they hear these tapes, and Marsha and Darden bring Gil Garcetti into the room, and they're like, oh my God, you need to have a seat. There's something.
Can we talk about how good Bruce Greenwood is?
He is so good. Oh, yeah.
Solid.
Wait, wasn't he in the movie Double Jeopardy?
Yeah.
Oh, was
he? He was the husband.
Right? He was the husband that pretended to die.
Oh,
sorry,
really?
Spoiler alert.
No, he is incredible because every time that he's angry, and speaking of you saying that it was like you watching a master class, I'm taking a class right now, and I always think about our teacher telling us, you know, be present, don't plan on anything, use your natural reactions. Right. And I'm like, what is the moment? Those 30 seconds that you're doing before you go into the scene. Every time that, like, and it's funny because there's so many shots of your guys' reactions, but your reactions set my mood. Like, that's how I'm supposed to be feeling. So it's just, it's crazy to see. But with him specifically, that's what I admire about smaller parts. You can't have the rest of this entire episode without those small parts because that's what ties everything together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when he just kind of casually says, yeah, he says something about Mexicans and so-and-so that they don't want it, like it was no thing but a chicken wing, like he heard it before.
No,
and
chicken wing.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
I've never heard that before.
Yes.
Shut up.
But a chicken wing?
But I mean,
what's that mean?
What you think? I'm sorry, y'all, but like I was saying, he said it so casually, and he does such a good job at it, but it just also shows you that it didn't really matter for everyone else, and that he had to say it in the course of 12 hours, how many times?
Upwards, sometimes dozens, depending on what it takes.
That for anyone to take it serious.
It's crazy.
But I know they said 30 times on there, and then they said 16, but I think it was more. It seems to me that it was more. I thought you thought it was more, too, the amount of times that he used that word in the transcripts, as well as...
Oh, actually, from what I understand, it was some over 80
over
times
80,
in actual tape.
But they might have used...
Right, and we've
the
obviously...
Combined it with the other stuff, yeah, because they said that there were 16 times where he referenced planting evidence and doing all that type of stuff. And you get why people would have different perspectives. You know, if that exists out there and people are having to deal with that, there's no way that somebody that's from the outside is going to step into the other person's world and understand that how it really is.
Right.
You know?
Well, one of the reasons I love being a part of this project was this conversation. I love what the production and what the writers and what the directors are doing in terms of exposing a perspective that I think a lot of Americans haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that, to me, is like, yes. Particularly the conversations between black people, which are expertly written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the conversations quietly, internally, behind closed doors between Darden and Cochran. Those are real conversations, black man to black man, that mainstream America doesn't see very often.
Absolutely.
And I just think it's so well done. And I tell the writers that all the time.
Mm-hmm. All the time. One thing,
especially because it's serious and not like put as a comedic relief or anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
that's
right. What I preach about also, because I'm like, no, this is just real. This is how the conversation
is.
Right.
Let me just say one thing that came to mind, was the whole idea that Darden was so into affirmative action at the beginning, and he said that in the other episode, that was kind of his, he was passionate about that, but at the same time, he always felt bad about the fact that he had to live in a world where people were second-guessing whether he really earned something or really deserved to be there. And it's just, you know, for a lot of people, you would look at that as being like a lifetime supply of food stamps, which might rob somebody of their ambition.
Sure.
It's like with the American Indians, how they're given the ability to have casinos and stuff, and when they do that, you see a lot of them wind up cracked out or on meth, and they're taking money that the government gives, and they have no ambition to go out and create. So you see how that perspective could be built in of entitlement that I was talking about in the beginning, and he grew out of that through this experience. But it makes you wonder about issues like that, like affirmative action. Are those positives? Do they really help, or do they hinder? Because it might rob somebody of their ambition or who they become. And I'm sure that's got to be part of the conversation in...
Not exactly that way.
People don't talk about it that way?
That's a whole other story. But yeah, we're talking about opportunity and diversity and the fact that diversity lends itself to a betterment for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we have affirmative action in the workplace and in college, and that's another separate conversation. But
so it's deep.
It's
complicated.
I wouldn't say it's that simplistic, but yeah.
But is it a conversation that's had in the black community? I'm just curious, because he was...
The conversation typically is, that I actually am qualified. Why are people assuming that you're not because of affirmative action? And who is actually benefiting from it?
And that is what Darden was playing. And I think Sterling did brilliantly, which is, look, I'm a product of affirmative action and I am qualified. Yeah. And this isn't a handout. I was qualified.
Yeah.
Right. I was as qualified as anybody else. But without affirmative action, they would not have given me the shot because they have biases.
See, I wonder if
they would have been with that guy. So they gave me the shot, and now I have to deal with the fact that other people think I was given a handout. I got to deal with that.
See, I wonder if he really believed it though himself, because as you see him blossom throughout the course of this, and specifically in this episode where he really comes out, I see it as him stepping into the belief that fuck yes, I am qualified.
I didn't see it that way.
I feel like he explains it once he has the personal conversation with Martian, when he says that all you wanted was the black face and not the black voice.
Right.
He gets that he's there and beneficial.
He's finding his voice. And Martian was the lead attorney. So any person brought on, you are going to be like
subordinate.
You are subordinate because she's a lead attorney.
Right. Yeah.
So we hear Mark Furman talk about Peggy York, which is Judge Ito's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, the things he's saying. He's sickened that she's a captain and doesn't want to take orders from this woman. And
you can tell his hate. What does he say? There's a part where he's like, you know, I hate those type of women. Blonde, something with a bag. I'm like, whoa, you're like...
Something about the bag weight, and their weight.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was disgusting. And that just goes to show you, like, that, like, those are sick people in the world.
Right.
You can't say that they're not, because you're not even... At least say something like, oh, because when she talks, she's a bitch. No, you're talking, you're like, I can't stand the way she looks and the way her pores are so big. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, it was just hate.
Yeah. Sounded like a cat fight.
Hate, oozing hate.
Yeah, he's personally offended by her power.
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh. Exactly. So Peggy can be called as a material witness, and then Ito would then have to disqualify himself, and that could lead to a mistrial. Now, the defense does not want the mistrial, right?
Yeah. No way.
Because if they did it again, they learn from their mistakes and blah blah blah. But the prosecution did. I felt like they wanted it.
And I think it's just tough because you've been there for a year, right? So now there's a mistrial based on these tapes that are, you know, inflammatory, and they try to go for him again. Even barring the fact that it might be a double jeopardy issue if they think it was forced, is the public going to react well? So you're going after him again because of these racist comments. You're going to try to exclude those. I think the public backlash would be just huge.
Can you explain
and
why it would be? Why would it be double jeopardy? Just explain that.
So if it's a normal mistrial, that's fine. But if it's seen that that's a cover and the prosecution was pushing for a mistrial because they thought their case wasn't strong enough here, then it's double jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's just a cover and not actually a mistrial,
how would that be ruled, Shaka? Who would make that?
When they appealed,
they'd have an emergency
appeal and say,
and of course they would go for that.
Do we believe? Do you guys think that they would have? Who would have benefited from that most? Would it have been the defense or the prosecution if there was in fact a mistrial?
If there was a mistrial, I don't see it being retried.
They wouldn't have done it.
I think they would have ultimately decided not to retry the case.
Really?
At that time, with that kind of presence, 92 was just a couple of years back. And people are now solidly for OJ. We kind of see when the Mark Furman comes in and they're hitting the SUV.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they would have probably declined to retry it.
Huh.
Wow.
Well, OJ is just like disappearing though now in all of this. I mean, they're remembering, but now it turned into something else.
Where
were allowed to be passionate and identify with the entire trial, even though they're identifying not to these murders.
Yeah. And just like they said, OJ was the imperfect vessel.
Yep.
Yeah. See, I love that
line. Yes, and Keisha Sharp, who's awesome,
amazing,
as Dale Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
To me, her line where she's saying, you know, OJ is an imperfect vessel, you know, to me that summed up Johnny Cochran's character and really the whole thing. For Johnny Cochran, his whole reasoning for being involved in this case,
which was beautiful in and of itself too. His reasoning was beautiful. His vision of what he wanted to accomplish was beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know that's even hard for me to say because I don't agree with the what was happening inside the court case in relationship to him. But it was beautiful. His getting these tapes out to the world so they could see what was happening. But he was saying, hey, this isn't about OJ. It's about the America.
That's right.
It's a black America. It's about America.
It's about America.
Yeah.
And that's why I like this series, because I feel like he's been so trivialized playing the race card. And usually that's to trivialize the fact that race had anything to do with something. Right. And I think here you see that it was an actual issue. He wasn't playing the race card. Mm-hmm. He was dealing with reality.
It was an actual issue.
Yeah. It's real. It is real.
There is racism that exists. But the imperfect vessel, for me, I mean, I don't know how it landed with y'all, but for me, that's a vessel of consciousness. We're all consciousness expressing ourselves in different ways, and he's an imperfect expression of consciousness. Right. But hey, I'm proud of you. And she had every right to be proud of him for what he was doing.
Absolutely.
I loved when they approached Ito and they said, you know, we have these tapes and your wife is mentioned. And he stops and says, we have to talk about this openly in court. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. That he's so honorable, transparent, you know.
He made some good calls.
Mm-hmm. And big ups to Kenny on this episode.
Yeah, Kenny.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go back and watch the tapes of Lance Ito, Kenny's got him down. All of his little movements. With the glasses. Every little thing he would do, which sometimes they use it in the final take, sometimes they didn't. But we literally, I think, we pretty much gave him a standing ovation after his scene where he's on the bench, and he's saying that I need to possibly let another judge when he's giving that speech about his wife.
It was good.
We literally were like, whoa.
It was good. It was really, because it was quite emotional too, and just sad to hear him say that. And he's like, of course I've been wounded like any other spouse would. Damn, and you can't not respect a man for that.
And he hasn't heard the tape, so he knows that it's just really inflammatory. But he's like, you know,
he's tortured.
Yeah,
and you see it, and he played it so well. Wow.
He played it like Lance Ito.
Which shows the beauty of Lance Ito in that moment, too. You really get to see, I mean, the calls that he made, they were spot on. The honor, as you said, I'm 100%.
So Cochran wants to move forward, but he say, okay, maybe we can get the parts with Peggy redacted. And the judge needs time to review it. And everybody loses their their marbles in the elevator, nonetheless. I don't know about you guys, but my elevator rides are usually like a second long. I don't have time to lose my...
We do a lot in the elevator.
Yeah.
You know, we get a lot
done. Yeah, well, if Darsha was in there, it might go on. Darsha.
He does. He snaps.
Yeah.
And he's, I told you not to use Furman. And just so livid about it.
Yes.
Because we were all talking about that up until that moment. Yeah. You know, you're waiting for him to just say
I told you so.
Say, I told you so. Like you were saying, I told you so. And then he finally gives it to us. Mm-hmm. You know?
But remember, he didn't know how to feel about it either when Johnny first told him. He didn't know if he was trying to trick him, if it was real, or if it was so, you know, it could just be that the stress of everything was bursting out of him.
Like his character or him as a person wanted to believe in his own case, and it's so tiring to know that the defense is right. And for you to talk to Michael Furman and know straight up, like he says, like, we know when somebody's racist. Like, you really can tell. You know, and you can, like, just down by the way that their reactions are to certain things that you say, you know exactly. Right. So it's funny because when he says that, and he tries to talk about it, and then he's like, "No, I have to be a loyal person. I have to be part of my team and stand up for it." And then,
and again, that also
he's speaks. Like, damn it! But I was right.
That also speaks to the money game, because the prosecution didn't have the money and resources to vet Furman as deeply as, you know, the defense was to pick up on this. And so that's a money game. If they had had those resources, they may have never used them.
Right.
You know?
I don't know about that. They knew about Furman. But they knew more than what they showed.
Really? But they know about...
They just didn't think it mattered. And that was... To my understanding, look, I'm not an attorney. Yeah.
Right.
You just play one on TV.
I just play one on TV. So I don't really know what the hell I'm talking about. But my sense is that they knew a lot of the facts and the data, but just think it would resonate the way that the defense understood that it would resonate with the jury, I think. And then it got away from them.
Really? Right. No, it really did, of course. That was ridiculous. Quickly.
So on TV, we see the coalition press conference, and Cochran is so brilliant for taking this publicly, getting the nation involved, getting people angry, release these tapes, you know? He knows exactly what he's doing.
That was just frustration, because they come back at you and they tell you two sentences, I can't even get in the information he planted. He's part of planting evidence. And so the only way to do it is to go to the media and do it in the public.
Absolutely.
Because he's got a larger vision for this. He has something that he wants to get done and an agenda that's not just about
budget. Like he said, manna from heaven, and he was not going to let that miracle just disappear. Like, we actually have proof the LAPD is rotten and wrong.
Right.
And frankly, I'm not so convinced that it was only for the people. I think it makes sense that it was also strategic in terms of trying to get it in
for
court.
Sure.
Because they do that a lot.
Oh, yeah. Right.
We
right.
see the attorneys grandstand. Go on television talking about A, B, C, D. And it's not just about public opinion and public, the public good. It's about getting something done in their case.
He wanted to trickle into the jury
somehow.
I think
he wanted to trickle into the jury.
And you know that there's a mistrial. Okay, now these people that might be called for a new jury... Everyone's heard it.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know.
So it was definitely strategic. So,
Strategy. Yeah, but
it was that frustration because I felt frustrated. I was just like, what?
No. Yeah.
But you also heard that in the off television time conversations that he was having with Keisha, if we're to believe that they're true, and real, where they were talking about the mission that they were on. And yes, we got it. We got the LAPD. We showed what they've been doing.
That's why it was so important, because if the tapes weren't released, regardless of this trial, I mean, damn, that's just another thing that they're covering up. That's just so, you know.
Then you might have had a ride.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But the legal world's defense, you know, there's something called if it's too prejudicial, more than it's probative.
Right. Okay.
So if the prejudicial value, it's so prejudicial that, you know, what we might learn from it is just highly outweighed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, i.e. Mark Furman turns out to be a rapist. If you tell the jury he's a rapist, then that's just so prejudicial, it has nothing to do with the case, that they might just find OJ not guilty based on that fact. This, to me, was very close to the case, but that's kind of why they limited the scope of what was let in.
And did they play that beautifully?
Which is an interesting point, because that was part of the defense's argument to not let in the fact that O.J. had beaten Nicole before. They said it would unduly
prejudice
the jury. However, the point of their story, they're connecting the prosecution's story, is that he beat Nicole, thus he killed her.
Yeah.
You know, so that was part of the story, and Ito let that in. Cochran's story is that cops are crooked, thus they planted evidence, thus you must acquit.
But
one of the things that the African American community believed that. You know, I remember being a young man when this was going on. I was about 18, 19. And
where are you from?
Dallas, Texas. Okay. But I happened to be in Orlando. We were shooting.
Oh, they're crooked out there.
They're crooked. No. Orlando's great. I was there. I was a Mouseketeer. I was on the Mickey Mouse Club at the time.
Love you.
Yeah, we were shooting the show. And so in between takes and stuff, we'd watch, you know, the trial. And but being a young black man, I'd been pulled over by cops, messed with unnecessarily, and nothing crazy, but just that feeling you get.
Absolutely.
When, to this day, when cops pull up behind me, I get nervous. Am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
You know, so that's real, you know, for if not most, many, many African-American men. So when I totally believe that it was more probable that they planted Evans to me than this man had brutally murdered, you know, his ex-wife in front of his children.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, just I'm going in with that.
Right.
Now prove
most of the
that
country,
this man
most of the
did
black
this.
Yeah.
Most of the black community
went
felt
into
that
it with
way
that. Yeah.
Because their life experiences have that. Whereas most of white America had no experience.
No reference.
Reference point for that. So you've got two different perspectives coming in here. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's offensive that people... It's offensive that the thought that people would be targeted for the color of their skin or anything like that. But unfortunately, it exists and it still exists today, and we hear about it.
Because it was considered racial profiling when it was to like a certain amount, and then I feel like that was almost okay for a short time until it was exaggerated again.
It happens over and over and over again, though.
I don't think it ever stopped. It's just more spotlight gets put on.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's all. Now we got Twitter and Facebook. If we had Twitter back then.
Oh, man. Can you imagine? Wow.
Can you imagine?
I just want to talk about how when Marcia stands up, my heart just broke into pieces the way she was like, I'm begging you from the bottom of my soul. Like, please don't let this.
I'm watching. I'm like, please don't play the tapes. Don't play the tapes.
He was saying that.
I was the same. Really. Sarah Paulson, amazing. Because like, how did she make me not want to get the tapes in the oven?
I'm always really impressed with her hallway conversations.
Yeah.
No.
Because it's not. She can make it's life. The hallway, but when she's talking, I'm like, oh, she needs a cigarette right now. Like, she just looks so stressed out to me. Yeah, and I'm like, damn. And then I always think about how they said she was on two shows at the same time. Get out of here.
She
and
actually was stressed.
She must have been.
She had to, man. Like literally, she would shoot scenes, run in the trailer, change, and go across the hallway and or across the little walkway and shoot other scenes. Yeah. In the same day, she would shoot both shows.
That's crazy to shift like that.
It was crazy.
Wait, so they were that close to each other?
And literally across the driveway in the studio.
What studios were you guys at?
We were across the next day.
Sony, right? Or Fox?
Fox.
Okay.
And what a difference, because just like you said, little hallway conversations, this is the first time it's just serious. Like, she makes that joke to Darden, and he's like, you know, I get it, but it's not funny. I'm not laughing.
Yeah, and I loved that line.
But in all the episodes, they did have those little moments where they laughed and smiled.
Yeah, but it was just so perfect, because it wasn't allowed then. Like, thank you for your attempt, but
this is not
But good. It doesn't matter. Do you know what just happened?
Yeah.
Like, he shakes. He makes me so nervous when he gets like out of control, you know, and Ito has to say, like, take three deep breaths. Oh, is that next?
Yeah. No, go for it.
Okay, great. So
she's got a timeline.
Right? I know.
We're blowing.
Somebody's got to control this.
Somebody keep us wrangled. She's like herding cats over here. Yeah. Doing a good job.
So to set you up, tapes finally get into court. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He decides to play them because now they're a national concern. You know, everybody's involved. They want to hear. So go ahead.
He stands up and he starts to argue it, and then I know everyone hates when I do this, but I'm gonna compare my life because I'm not black, so I'm not gonna act like I am.
What do you really think, Stephanie? Yeah. Tell them.
No, I'm just saying, like, if I was trying to argue a similar case and someone who mentored me, possibly like a strong Latina woman or whatever, who is like a representative of the community, tried to do something like that, like it's like a trigger, because it's like, no, what are you saying? Like, let me talk. Because throughout this entire thing, Cochran's in his ear, like, he's not doing the right thing, you know, he's manipulating the whole situation. Mm. When he stands up and then he gets mad, I'm like, oh my God, calm down. But then he almost looks like he's gonna cry because he gets so frustrated. Yeah. So it like, you know, he exudes that feeling to us, or I don't know if I said that correctly.
Yeah.
And so I love that. And again, it's just like, some of the acting here is just unbelievable.
I told Sterling I thought he was gonna rewrite the way that African Americans feel about Chris Darden, because at the time, whether you know this or not, I think many, many, many black people, if not most of them, thought he was an Uncle Tom, me included.
Right.
And
that's the first thing I said when he got on the case. I was like, oh, Uncle Tom?
He was not at all.
I thought he was a good voice for black America. Like, absolutely.
But he was in an impossible situation.
Exactly. Right, in an impossible,
What can you
do? And to watch Sterling play those complications, some of the finest...
In this episode specifically, he comes out and you see the texture to it, the emotional texture and the richness to him having that depth where he's like, and see, that's the part that Shockwood, you said, now we think that OJ is guilty or not guilty or this and that. Is there an underlying energetic theme with the actors on both sides that's leaning toward guilt? I believe that there is.
You know, that's
that's lean towards guilt.
For yeah,
internally, meaning
energetically,
the people,
like, they're playing the role as if they believe, each character believes that he's guilty.
On the scripts and based on my research, and based on the scripts, one of the reasons that I was very interested in playing Carl Douglas is because, in my personal opinion, he was the most in integrity with the idea that OJ was innocent.
Interesting.
Mm. Everyone had a lot of different motivations going on here, as we see in the show, as you read in the books, from the defense side. Yeah. And I found that interesting. There were some scenes in draft, some things that we shot that didn't make the final cut, that really showed, and I've talked to Carl Douglas as well quite a bit, and it was about, you know, he felt he was innocent.
Wow.
And it's the burden of proof is on the prosecution, and they didn't prove their case, period. And this is the American judicial system. Mm-hmm. This is how it works. Yeah. Until you prove your case, my client is innocent, and I believe that. Yeah. As we've seen with a lot of the other characters on the defense, there's a lot of other motivations going on.
Right.
You sure. know, who's no, who
status,
knows?
Whatever.
I think there's something, personally, there's something in the back of a lot of their minds.
Yeah, how this could guy might have did it.
I think this guy might have did it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I don't think so with Carl.
Interesting.
So we hear the tapes, the horrific tape of Furman talking about grabbing the girl and calling her a bee and all that. Marcia and Darden later in the office, he thinks it's over. He's like, that's it. I mean, this is over. And she still has hope. She's mm-hmm. still holding on. She's like, maybe he's going to find this all irrelevant and throw it out. And they kind of make a truce because... she's mad at him for the whole glove thing. He's right. mad at her for the Furman thing, and they say sorry and that tension.
Me and Shocker noticed that little thumb rub.
Yeah, that little.
Yeah.
I have to say, I read an article today about Darden, and it was quoting Darden, and he said they were playing the roles as if they were in love, and he said, that wasn't how it was for me. We cared about each other deeply, he said, but the way that they're portraying it is that we were in love.
He's still been very coy about it, though.
Yeah, but he was coy. He absolutely said,
he said, we hung out a lot. We, you know, we had told some jokes. I consider that a relationship.
Oh, my
know?
Gosh.
Yeah, he is coy. He's leaving some teasers.
You know, that's interesting. I don't know that I agree with it. I don't see them as in love.
I don't see them as in love either.
I see them as very
either.
Close,
yeah.
attracted to each other.
Yes.
There you go, yeah.
And very close.
Yeah, I don't see love.
I wouldn't be surprised if they hooked up, though. I wouldn't be surprised if
they hooked up. Right, but that's just to release some stress. Yeah. But
they're attracted to each other is what I get. But
The moment for me after both of their speeches, when they make eye contact with each other and only eye contact, that was also amazing.
And that Marcia,
I mean, to understand each other in that
and
way.
And
that
Marcia was willing to go to jail for Darden.
Yeah.
When she
says, she's ready to rumble. Let's go. I didn't know what to admit, actually. When I was watching the scene, I was wondering, does she mean I'm going to go to jail or am I ready to fuck?
Yeah.
I was like, you know what's funny? Okay. I thought she meant, like, should I make myself more masculine? That's how I
see, there you go. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I thought, that's why, remember when I was like, that's right. And he was like, no, she means like she's going to jail.
Go to jail.
But they were also standing up for their case and for what they believed to be so. So it was like, you know.
So we're running low on time.
Oh, no.
So basically, you get the facts.
I get the facts. I do a lot of faxing.
Yeah. A lot of faxing.
If you notice, this is my second time around the fax. Yeah.
And so we learn that they're only keeping two sentences out of everything. Yeah. And everybody is livid.
Heartbroken.
What was that scene
angry.
Like?
It was a lot. And Anthony will laugh at me. It was difficult to get the scene, actually. We were running around because it was supposed to be a little bit chaotic.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, sometimes we're actors and we're sensitive. And, you know, how do you play chaos, you know, and still be emotionally in the moment? And we were messing up a lot. But it was a deep scene to play. And Angel had to really bring it because, you know, camera swings over to her. And she's in mid,
she just looks worried,
you know,
like,
worn out crying.
Yeah.
You know, she had to really go there. And that was... It was an important scene, I think, because it represented, I think, what it meant to us personally.
Yes.
Right.
What this trial had become to us personally, you know?
Which is what I was going to ask. What was that moment, you think, for Sean, a.k.a. Angel, to break down like that? Besides, like, just the stress for it, just like, no, you know, like...
All of it.
It was just, she just...
But,
at that moment, it was her most, like, investment that I saw.
Absolutely. And I think... I can't speak for Angel, but the way I looked at it and what she represented in that moment was to show that we're also human beings. Mm-hmm. She is a black woman.
Yep.
And those tapes and not being able to mm-hmm. get
that's
those in the court, above and beyond being an attorney.
Yes. Yeah.
This is getting personal.
That justice, right?
Yeah, it's like it's justice, mm-hmm. ironically. It's justice for her personally,
it's like today we see those dash cam videos, but there's no indictment.
Or, right. You know, somebody getting shot in the back.
And there's no indictment. Yeah. It's that feeling just like, we have this, but how is this not going forward?
Total helplessness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Complete and utter.
They've taken your rights, and it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Finally, we get Furman walking into that courtroom, and he's getting those looks.
Like,
and Bailey says it takes a man of certain character to be hated by both sides.
Like, what an eloquent way to be like, you're a shitty person.
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you...
But he decides to plead the fifth for every question. And it was so brilliant when Cochran was like, wait, I've got one more.
Did you plan the evidence? I plead the fifth.
Right.
Okay. Like, how do you, and what I've always said is I don't think anyone, you know, I think you're going to feel, well, some of us have changed our minds throughout the show. But I always felt that most people are going to, at the end of the show, still feel, whether he's guilty or not, you're going to feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you will understand why he was acquitted.
Yes.
And I will even go further to say, I think you might agree with the acquittal, even if you think he did it. You can't, when the guy says, did you plant evidence? I plead the fifth. If you're doing your job as a juror, you have to take that into account, and you have to say, wow, you know.
He could have said no.
And in the course of a long trial, this was the day the jury's alert. This is the day they're like, so they've missed out maybe some DNA evidence or this random prosecution.
Speaking of the DNA evidence, you had said that they found EDT.
Yeah, Carl Douglas told me, and you know we know that word now, EDT.
Right, it's a preservation agent, if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah, from Making a Murderer. They had that in some of the blood, OJ, the blood that they found.
That they found.
And you also mentioned that there were just little pin drops of the blood that they found. Absolutely. It wasn't huge amounts.
The blood in the Bronco was less than one half of a drop of blood. There was microscopic blood after three tests on the socks. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the fourth test later where they found microscopic drop of blood that was on three sides, as it was explained to me by Carl Douglas, on like as if you lay a sock flat. This side, underneath that, and then the top side or the bottom side, and not all the way through.
See, that's a totally different story. So when you,
when you frame it that way, when you look at these are kind of things that the jury saw, at the end of the day, and deliberated on, and had reasonable doubt.
And the missing blood. So now you know you're starting to connect blood, the dots. And
they took the shoes to Simi Valley of all places. I mean, what are you going
to
do with that?
Maybe he wanted to go for a jog.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to go for a jog. Or maybe just say, I'll book it in the morning. You know.
Gosh. Lastly, we see that Marsha gets a ruling, and it's for her own divorce custody battle. And she gets primary custody. And it's just a nice reminder that through all of this, real life was still happening. Right. You know, this was a real thing for her.
Yeah.
But I loved how
she's
Angela,
superwoman,
she was,
by the way.
Yeah.
This is awesome. The real Marsha Clark is a superwoman. And the way Sarah plays her is extraordinary. I mean, I can't even fathom dealing with what she dealt with during this trial. I mean,
everything
during this trial. She was absolutely amazing. And it's easy for anybody to backseat drive to say, "Oh, you should have done that. You could have done this."
You be in the middle of a divorce.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids crying.
To compliment everybody on this, everybody was doing the best they could. I think they were firing on all cylinders and
these were all brilliant people doing an extraordinary job on both sides. A couple mistakes here and there, and.
And you see people cracking, so I'm excited for the next episode because I thought people were starting to really feel the pressure here. You know, it's been a long time.
One more episode.
Unbelievable
left.
That there's one more.
Jeez. Yeah. Join us on the conversation, you guys. Leave us comments on Twitter. Find us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Dale, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on social media at Dale Got Boldo and official Dale Got Boldo on Facebook.
Awesome. You can find me on social media at Pegarad.
Dale, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate
it. Thank you for having us.
This was awesome. All of you can find me on Twitter at Stephanie Georgie and on Instagram at TheStephanieGeorgie.
Twitter and Instagram, Shaka Strong.
Reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram at Chris Howard Live.
Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.